suicides in Alaska. And it's a sensitive subject and a lot of times a difficult one to talk about. But we felt that it was important that the legislature at least take a look at it. So they formed a committee consisting of initially 5 members, there are now 4 members on the committee, and we were charged with going out and holding some public hearings around the state of Alaska, gathering testimony and statistics and facts, and then bringing a report back to the legislature in January. This next January, when we start over in June, we'll have prepared a report to bring back to the legislature with recommendations or ideas on what we might be able to do at the state level to try and help out somewhat with the problem of suicide in Alaska. And it's been tough to talk about the issue many times for us, certainly in the Senate, as we've gone to the different committee meetings, and certainly for a lot of people to come forward and testify about. But we felt that it was important to get the subject out on the table, so to speak, and to talk about it, and to start finding out what some of the problems were and what we might be able to do. And so we've kind of gone forward with that, and there's a real desire on the part of the legislature to genuinely see what we can do about it. And it's something that I'm sure we're not going to come up with one answer that's going to solve the problem, but at least we can provide enough public awareness so people start to realize that it is a problem, and that hopefully we can start down the path of improving the situation and reducing many of the suicides that take place in Alaska. And if through our initiatives and efforts, if we're able to prevent just one suicide, we'll certainly feel like we've been successful in addressing the problem and moving towards that direction, and that our efforts will have been worthwhile. Most of the testimony to this point has really been from older people, from people who are involved through different departments in the state of Alaska or different government entities or healthcare professionals that deal with the subject. And we really haven't had an opportunity to talk to kids or young people in high school that are probably very familiar with the subject and probably have firsthand experience or know somebody or heard of somebody that committed suicide that they're familiar with. And so it's going to be a chance for us really to hear some of your feelings and some of your ideas maybe on what we might be able to do to help prevent this in the future. So we look forward to that. Senator Eliason, of course, is from Sitka here. Sometimes, as Larry pointed out, from Bethel, but I cover quite a vast area. It takes in all the drainage of the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, goes over towards Anchorage on the Cook Inlet side, takes in Tionic and Beluga, some of those villages, swings up past McGrath and Lake Minchumina, Nikolai, Kalida, and Medfra, on over towards Nenana, just outside Fairbanks, takes in Minto, goes around Fairbanks, and then up the Yukon River to the Canadian border, up north as far as Arctic Village and the Brooks Range, and then west across the top of the Brooks Range as far as Bettles and the Kaibab River, and then all down the Kaibab River drainage. So it's a big area. There's about 74 different communities in my district, and it's a real challenge to get out to visit all those villages and see all the people in the district, but I sure enjoy doing it. Also with us today is Susan Sowell, who is the coordinator of Rural and Native Services in the Division of Mental Health in the Department of Health and Social Services for the state of Alaska. That's quite a long title, and I hope I got it all right, Susan.
Susan will do.
Susan will do. But Susan is from Antioch, near Bethel, where I'm from, and she just moved down to Juneau recently. I know the Department of Health and Social Services has a lot of concerns, as does the legislature, about the alarming statistics that we've really seen on suicide. And so Susan is kind of devoting her time and efforts towards that also. We're pleased to have her here. She's been participating in all our hearings. And maybe if Senator Eliason, would you like to say
just a few words? Thank you, John. You might know that we had a meeting here over a month ago. At that particular time, the group of research, which is a Southeast Alaska health group, were having a meeting in Sitka. It was a golden opportunity for us to meet with that group, and it was a very well-attended public hearing. And I think there might be a lesson in civics here, because one of the ladies, young ladies from Mount Edgecombe School, as one of the last participants, said that she thought they had a lot. You might have a lot to offer here, as much as helping this committee. And I think that's an example where a suggestion by a high school student to a legislator, which is the ultimate result in this particular meeting. And we think Mount Edgecombe is an excellent place to have a meeting, like Senator Bingley said, that you represent most of rural Alaska, and there's a great deal of problems in rural Alaska, and it's a long ways out there, and we have certainly have those problems in urban areas also, but rural Alaska we're trying to reach to, and this is certainly a good place to start. So we're looking forward to this hearing and for any help you can give us, and we certainly do need a lot of help. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Maybe Susan, would you like to say a few words on behalf of the department?
Sure. The Department of Health and Social Services, and specifically in it, the Division of Mental Health, is responsible for operating community mental health centers, 27 of them all over the state. And those centers play a key role in helping people who are experiencing stress in their lives, and extreme stress and feeling bad about your life is, of course, related to suicidal feelings. The division is committed to helping solve the problem in the state of Alaska, and one of the things we know doesn't work is for one group of people to plan services for another group of people. And one of the things my two teenage kids remind me of constantly is that they are different from adults. So it doesn't work for adults to plan to do good things for kids without hearing what the people themselves, you people, have to say, and that's why we're here.
Thank you, Susan. Well, Larry, if you want to get things started here, you know, don't be intimidated or afraid. We're just Senator Lassner, Dick, and I are just a couple of guys up here sitting down, so, you know, just pretend like you're talking to us. Don't worry about the fact that it's some kind of a formal meeting or anything.
Just a little bit of background. Some of the students don't know some of the statistics at Mount Edgecombe High School, but basically, at Mount Edgecombe High School, we are about 83% rural, our student population, and about 84% Native Americans. So the complexion of the student body is a little bit different in from the old Mount Edgecombe, because there were Natives only in the Edgecombe of old. So we are now represented about 16%, and this year that's all Caucasian. So we are able to allow Black students and Caucasian students at Mount Edgecombe High School now, because it is run by the state of Alaska and it is not a federal Native boarding school anymore. So I've given the two senators a breakdown of the ethnic breakdown of our school. And also, I don't know if all you students know this, but there's, I believe, 55 school districts in the state. Mount Edgecombe High School has students in 30. We have students from 30 districts. So you represent more than half the state. So there's no place that this group could go to get that broad of a representation of the state at one time without a considerable amount of money. You can imagine what it would cost to bring all of you in from St. Paul and Barrow and wherever, Fort Yukon or whatever. It would cost a tremendous amount of money. So basically, we did have a meeting yesterday, senators, and we did ask the students that they not give their names, because this is also being taped for radio, and so it may go statewide. And the other thing is that we ask that you not specifically give a village name if you're going to refer to a village, but that you just give the size of the village, and they will know the area, because you'll be speaking probably from that area. So let's start out then with the student presentations. And if you are the spokesperson for your group, if you'd sit in this chair right here or this chair here, if there's two of you, and let's go ahead and get started then with Southeast students first. So Southeast students would come up the first two tables.
We've pinpointed, I think, you know, in really general areas, I think about four major problems. One of them is probably has to do with not having enough activities to do, because a lot of kids find drinking just something to do, and taking drugs just something to do, because there's really nothing else going on in town. And oftentimes it is abused, but sometimes it's for personal problems, but other times, you know, there's peer pressure, and other times, yeah, it's just something to do. And another one is personal problems. I noticed last year I was in the Natural Health Helpers Program, sponsored by the Sick and Teen Resource Center. And I've noticed that a lot of kids come to us kids for help or to talk to us because they feel more comfortable talking to a person at their level.
So you feel peer groups are one way then to help with students who have some serious problems.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they can really, you know, solve their problems, but they can help smooth them down a little bit. You know, people need the kids need somebody to talk to, and I think kids are a nice alternative.
Easier to talk to your friends about the problems you're having or whatnot than to go to some public health official or.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Another one would probably be financial. Well, that can kind of go off into another subject, I guess. But those are other reasons. I think they kind of fit into personal problems too. Activities. Yeah, we don't.
Job employment.
Yeah.
Family problems.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same about family problems. Some people in the family have problems with, like, people molest their children, give them alcohol or drugs, either that way. Or some people just doesn't get along, just not enough love in their family. And I've seen that a lot. I can probably say I experienced it too, but I can see that much. Family problems.
And of course, typically in those kinds of situations, of course, have more of a tendency to leave the students in their home environment rather than take the students out of the home environment.
Yeah.
So it does cause some problems. I know that a lot of the students who apply for admissions here, that's a lot of, we get a lot of that.
Trying to get away from a situation at home?
Yes.
And it can be that the students can't get any rest at night because there's parties going on or whatever. It can be a lot of different factors. But we do have a lot of applications from students like that.
I really like the Sick and Teen Resource Center. They set up programs for employment for kids and the Natural Helpers Program, and they set up just extra activities for high-income kids and sick guy kids. It's a really nice program, and I think that might be something nice to set up in a bunch of different other places.
What was the name of it again?
Sitka Teen Resource Center.
Sitka Teen Resource Center.
Mm-hmm.
And who, do you know who runs that, or how is it funded, you know?
I'm not quite sure, but a lot of times for our activities, we raise the money by selling things. Like last year, for the Natural Helpers, for one of our trips, we sold submarine sandwiches, and we sewed up a handmade quilt, and we auctioned that off. And I guess a friend of one of the workers there got a gift from a friend that made bracelets, and we auctioned those off. And so we made a lot of money for our trips and stuff like that. So we usually fund ourselves by selling things.
You come from a village situation. What in a village in the southeast that you come from? What are the particular problems to your village that are unique to your village? Do you think, or what do you see happening in your village?
Mostly family problems. There isn't really much drug abuse or alcohol abuse, but you know, kids stay out late and they go to parties because of neglect. And their parents, and it's just something, you know, it bugs me.
So the parents don't require the kids to be home at night, and so they
do, but
the kids, they stay out late because, you know, they're from, it's a big thing if they don't come in at a certain time. I mean, they're not going to go out and look for them. And so I just decide to stay out late.
Their parents work?
Most of them, yeah.
Most of them do work.
For the logging industry, yeah.
So, like, you think that in some cases kids would desire from their parents more discipline in some cases, or more standards that are set for them?
Yeah, there's more attention.
More guidance?
Yeah. I know a lot of them, they don't really have a direction, or a general direction that they should be going in their life. They just stray out.
Okay, well, we have quite a few to go through, so.
I guess we're also you know, trying to identify any signs or signals from people who are you know, who might have suicidal tendencies, and the alarm bells that you would recognize that we wouldn't be able to see. If we can find any type of indication these people need help, can you maybe tell us how you would without just them coming up and telling you? Mm-hmm. Is there any way you can tell about this, you know, their activities or their actions?
Massive depression.
Yeah.
Or giving away valuable stuff that meant a lot to them. Like a stereo or walking tapes. Anything valuable.
Some isolate themselves, walking people away in the room, or whatever.
Okay.
They pretty much self to themselves, solitary.
Yeah. Through the Sitka Teen Resource Center and the Natural Helpers mm-hmm. program, have you had any training? Have they provided
yeah.
any training?
They do. Last year we had, I think, two training sessions, we get training from social workers, counselors, teachers, and just some outside people, but generally social workers and counselors.
Do you think that was helpful? Do you think that as a result of that you'd be better able to recognize potential problems, or do you think that you pretty much had instincts towards those things anyhow?
I knew, but for those of who didn't, you know, I think it was nice. You know, it's nice for them to know. I can't say that I knew everything that they were teaching us, but I had a vague idea. I mean, because I'm, you know, there are people experiencing problems, and it's sometimes pretty obvious, but in a lot of cases it's not. So I guess the training is helpful in recognizing that some of those are.
And how about as far as if you, for instance, if you thought a friend of yours was suicidal or might have some problems with that, was there training as to what you should do then, or what would you do?
There's training in recognizing that. And yeah, there was also training and how you should kind of act towards them, because you know that usually they're pretty sensitive, and so they did train us on how to do it. But then again, I've talked to a lot of people and stuff like that about it. I've attempted to commit suicide, and you get the feel of it. I mean, you pretty much know how to act towards one once you've been with one. I mean, I'm not saying they're all alike, but you know generally how to act.
And part of the training, too, is that if you've got a real serious problem with a peer, that you're not professionally trained to handle that kind of a problem either. And you seek professional help at a certain point. And I think if we have some problems with that, this community, Sitka in particular, is not set up to provide that kind of professional help that we really need. Search the hospital over here probably gives us the most help of anyone for professional services. But overall, they are not really geared up to take care of youth either. They're more geared up to take care of adults. And so there's not a lot of programs that are geared towards high school student population. And so when the kids seek professional help, a lot of times we have problems finding it. And then we have problems with follow-up, in that it takes a considerable amount of hours of working with people who have those types of problems. And And they're overloaded, to say the least, at the hospital here.
And of course, with the village situation, if somebody may, if the cause of the problem may be something that's in the home or back in the village, if you go back to the community and there's no follow-up or no support in the community, you're right back in the same situation again.
And we've had calls where we're required by state law to report physical abuse, as a for instance, and that there has not been the follow-up when the students go home. In other words, the students come here because they've been physically abused. We report that back to wherever they come from. When they go back, sometimes there's not the follow-up that there should be. And the reason we get for that is that the caseloads are overwhelming for those people who are supposed to be dealing with those kinds of situations. They have caseloads of 75 to 100 people. So that it is a large problem, and I think the problem is probably more difficult or probably greater with high school age students than any other age population. It seems to be greater at the 14, 15 through 18, 19 year old level. It seems to be not a lot of help in that age range.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be. That's where we feel that the emphasis really should be, or at least more emphasis should be placed at that level statewide.
I've noticed that, like in Juneau, that's a pretty big school. It's not quite as big as Anchorage, but it's a fairly big school. And there is one JOM counseling section in the high school, and a few kids go to it. But on the other side, for just all the kids, there's only like four counselors, and they usually just talk to you about grades.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's about it. I don't think there's enough personal help. Yeah.
What do you think about that? I know there was a survey, I think it was, it must have been statewide, it was, there were 6,000 students that were surveyed,
mm-hmm.
and only 1% of them said that if they were having a problem, that the person that they would go to seek help would be their counselor at school.
Mm-hmm.
Over 50% answered a friend or some peer in school, but I think only 1% answered that they would go to a counselor. What do you think?
Our counselors had a bad reputation. A couple of them had really bad reputations. I mean, the teachers thought they were really, really nice, but a lot of the kids thought that they really didn't like talking to them because, I don't know, they were too authoritative, I guess. If a kid had a problem, then like it with their parents or something, they would go straight to the parents and say this and this and this and this or whatever they told them, and it was just kind of, you didn't want to talk to them.
I see. You can confide in them.
There's another problem with that too, Senator, in that I was trained as a counselor. Part of my undergraduate training was as a counselor. Most of the training you receive as a school counselor is not in crisis intervention. It's in how to get students to college, how do you do follow-up surveys, how you do achievement tests, how you take care of special ed testing, how you do all these types of activities. And I know our school counselor here was not trained in any of this. So when you're looking at school counselors, I can see students responding that way. And that's part of the problem, is that we don't have those kinds of crisis intervention counselor professionals as part of the school situation. So that is a problem. But you're talking about a difference between an academic counselor and a social or crisis intervention counselor. And I think that the universities, as a for instance, especially in Alaska, could certainly help all of us if there was more of that type training included in their programs, so that when they go out, and that could also go for all teachers. You know, I think all teachers use this type of training prior to the time, especially before they go in the bush. Most of the teachers that graduate from Alaska colleges start out in rural schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all face these problems, and many of them don't know how to deal with them. Many
Maybe that's something that school districts could coordinate with the university. I mean, maybe, you know, the school districts need to start setting a standard for hiring counselors that they have some background in crisis intervention. Or the teachers have some coursework that's along those lines, so that, you know, if the school district starts setting those standards, then, you know, the labor pool is going to start to get an education towards that direction or get trained in an area that might be more conducive to them for them to be hired by the school.
And part of your problem, too, is that when schools receive cuts, one of the first areas they cut is counseling.
Yeah.
Because it's not a classroom activity. It's not math or science or social studies or those things that are required. And so you cut back in those places that you can cut back on and still stay within state laws. And counseling, unfortunately, happens to be one of those areas. Well, we need to hear from some other students, so thank you, Southeast.
Thank you.
Interior students, and that would be Beaver, Fairbanks, Grayling, Holy Cross, Tanana.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, when we got together yesterday and discussed what we thought were problems, we came up with a whole bunch of reasons, I mean, well, causes for alcohol, drug abuse, depression, which leads to alcohol and drug abuse. And I'll just list them off, and if you have questions, you can ask. No individualism, and you only a few peers, unemployment, monotony, poverty, adolescence, no challenge in the educational systems.
No challenges?
Not from the school I came from. and counselors, non-native counselors. There's a problem with that, and the feeling of isolation when you're living in a small village, because it's so expensive to get out.
When you say no challenges in the educational system,
I can't,
because the schools are so small that...
Yeah, that, and there are only like maybe two or three teachers in the school, and like at home, where I'm from, at school my freshman year, I can't remember ever having homework. I never did bring home homework, and here I get it every night, and
plenty of
every single, yeah, you know.
To me, I don't know if the teachers were skilled enough to be teachers or not, but the, you know, the teacher I had didn't know anything about math, and I think I got a lot more of the problems down wrong that either he didn't see or something, because down here I realized there was a lot more that I needed to learn.
What I realized about the village educational system, that there is no challenge, because before I came here, I didn't really have to work. I didn't have to work at all to pass my classes. And I mean, I got decent grades without working. And I felt that if I were to graduate from the school that I went to before, I wouldn't be ready to go to college. I wouldn't be ready to go out and...
Yeah, you can't go out and just be somebody, because when you're in a village, there's no individualism. Like when I was at where I'm from, I couldn't be myself. I was always in a group of peers. And these were like the only five friends I had in the whole village, because that's all they were to hang out with. And whenever they wanted to go and party or anything, I couldn't say no, because, hey, those are my only friends, and I don't want to be left out, you know.
It's not like you can switch peer groups.
Yeah, it's not like, it's not at all.
I guess you aren't all going to the same school.
No.
We're talking about different schools.
Merck from different places, but it's the same situation.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same setting.
See, these are small villages, 400 and less people. We go from 400 to 60.
I think all five of you from all five different schools, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. No, Jeremy and I.
Oh, I guess it's the same school.
And I know for a fact this one woman had a really serious alcohol problem. She was a heavy drinker, and she was not an alcoholic, and she was really scared, and she knew she had a problem, and she wanted to quit, but she absolutely refused to go to see the village counselor, because that person wasn't native. Yeah, that was pretty sad, because I know the counselor probably could have helped her, but she, that was just the only reason she would.
Uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, very uncomfortable, especially when, you know, a lot of them come from outside, out of the village, you know, and you don't know this person. difficult.
Does that same problem exist if the example is a person come out of Southeastern?
You mean a native out of Southeastern or something?
Wouldn't be as...
I don't know.
It's pretty hard to train.
Yeah, from...
They have difficulties going back to their own villages, we found, too. This is a problem created. But as long as they're...
Alaska native or something.
...more accustomed to your lifestyle, it makes it easier to deal with
it. I think they'd have to be like up here. They'd have to, you know... I mean, not up here, but have to have been in the same situation, lived the same kind of like village life or something.
In specific cases of where there's been a suicide attempt in your villages, the cases that you know about, what percentage of those cases, or about how many, if you can give us any kind of an idea, would be linked with substance abuse? The suicide attempt.
100%. All of them, alcohol or drug abuse.
Every suicide or non-accidental death that has occurred where I'm from has been alcohol or drug related. There's no doubt about it.
You can look at our graveyard and you can say, this one died from alcohol, this one died from alcohol, and over half of that, over half of our graveyard.
And you can't go and just, you know, make a village dry and say, okay, it's problems because, you know, people bootleg, it's back to life, a lot of people, and you need to go and, like, a lot of these problems can be just nipped right at the bud, you know, like unemployment, you know, if you got people working, it wouldn't give them the low self-esteem, you know, that comes from, like, if you say you're a parent and you have 6 children to support and you don't have a job, and that just makes you feel really bad about yourself, and you isolated in this little village, and it's monotonous. And what you're going to do is you're going to go out and buy, you know, a bottle and sit there in your living room and drink it.
Mm-hmm. What about before? What did, before, I guess, when there was a more of a total dependency on subsistence lifestyle, everybody worked because you had to work
to survive.
Mm-hmm. How do people survive now? I mean, why is the incentive gone to go out and support your family, say, by hunting and then moving the family out to fish camp in the fall, or in the spring, and moose hunting in the fall and trapping in the winter?
I think it might be because usually you had your children helping you when you went out and did all that stuff. You know, you had your kids there hanging the fish and everything, and values are changing, and the kids don't want to go out and help, and the parents, you know, can't really do it all by themselves. I don't know. That's
well. What about that? I know in the last group they mentioned the activities. You know, not enough things to do in villages. Not enough activities for kids. Is it kids not want to go out and help their parents in the trap line or help the fish camp in the summertime?
Well, I think they're more thinking of more to the future, because you can't go out and trap all day with your parents and come home 8 o'clock or your dad. And come home 8 o'clock that night and expect to finish your homework and to go out and see your friends. And so you do have to think of your, I guess, your future too.
Mm-hmm.
And we're caught up in changes right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a certain part of our life, or the native life, or our history, where we have to think of the future, not depend on today and how much fur we're going to catch tomorrow. But we have to think of, we have to broaden our horizons.
And you can't...
So what's going to happen, though, to the economy in the village? I mean, if there aren't enough jobs for everybody to have a job in the village, and that it's changing, as you said, away from the subsistence lifestyle, and that kids are looking to an education, to a future, to be able to get a job, what's going to happen if there isn't a base of employment in that community to be able to support 200 people or 60 people or 400 people in that community?
People are probably going to feel, I don't know, again, you have probably low self-esteem and people getting on each other's nerves, because in a village, you can't be different from anybody else, and if you are, you know, people are going to start looking at you like, you know, you can't be an individual.
And like when only half of the village has jobs, and the other half are sitting home waiting for a job, you know, you know right there who feels more powerful,
yes. and who feels mm-hmm. more frustrated.
Definitely.
And there's going to be a controversy between them.
Subsistence isn't always guaranteed. You're not always going to catch something. You're not always going to have that. I mean, it's not always there. And sometimes you just don't have the right kind of day, or, you know, you can't guarantee a full year-round employment on subsistence. There's just no way. There's no...
It's too much of a gamble whether you're going to get a move this year or not, because you really don't know.
And like, there's no way to tell.
And then this time of our life now, we have to worry more about money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder.
We also came up with a few things that might help. What we thought. Jobs, native counselors. I'm not too sure about whether they should be, you know, native, the same ethnic. I don't know if that would really make a difference.
People that you could relate to.
Yeah.
That can understand the situation.
Mm-hmm. Somebody who knows, yeah. More challenging school curriculums. That's really needed. Recreation centers for youth. And youth conventions, like between the villages. Get people out of their isolation, you know, get out and be meeting other people.
Two villages this summer got together, and that was, two of us here went to that convention. And I learned a lot about how our problems were basically the same.
Yeah.
Although we were maybe 300 miles away, they were the same.
Yeah, so a lot of the villagers don't seem to realize that, you know, they think that their problems are unique and everything, mm-hmm. but somebody over here has the exact same problem.
Well, that's something about Edgecombe and other boarding schools that were around the state, prior to the state taking over all the education and putting facilities in each village. Is that there was kind of that coming together or gathering of people from all around the state,
mm-hmm.
and being able to make friends and learn about different areas of the state and the problems and see that you've got the same problems as other communities. But it's somewhat changed now because most kids, you know, are born in the village and go to grade school and high school right in that same village, and maybe they don't have as much exposure as from the kids who were growing up in the late 50s and 60s.
They absolutely wouldn't make it in college, or they probably might, but it would be really, really hard. Like, I wouldn't be able to point out any of these if I just came straight from Holy Cross to here and, you know, started talking to you, because I had to be out of the village. I had to be... Yeah, and then I went back and all of a sudden it all jumped out at me and I noticed all these problems, and it was just really, really different. I mean, I saw Holy Cross, I mean, the town really differently.
Right now, I'm in a stage where I'm looking back at home and noticing how different things are here. And
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, I'm starting to feel sorry for people at home. But I'm still right there. But then I have to get out of there. I have to realize there are other things. But then I really want to help my home. You know, I want to get my friends out of there. And that's part of the reason I came to this, so I can be able to tell them about it when I go home, so that they'll learn what I'm learning right now.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you all, listening to what you've had to say, if you see yourselves going back to live in the village when you finish here or college or whatever comes next for you.
I don't think I'd go in there, right? Unless things change drastically, I wouldn't go back to my village. I'd stay in Alaska, though.
Yes.
I'll stay in Alaska.
It's really hard living in a village because no matter where you are or what you do or who you're with, someone's always watching you. I mean, someone always knows what you're doing, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
Well, not in that kind of a sense, you know. It's...
work together. And
no matter if you're, people
you've
talk.
You've got a problem that you go talk to somebody about pretty soon.
Yeah, and it's going to change with every, you know, communication problems. The story gets changed around 10 times. Like,
mm-hmm.
by the time it gets to your parents, at least, you know. Okay, that's not what happened.
I think it would be real, real beneficial to train people our age. People our age to recognize a suicidal person and to see and to know what to do about it, because I mean, if you think about it, every high school student or teenager or however we want to put it, every young person who is thinking of committing suicide is not going to go to an adult and tell them, you know. They always talk to their best friend or kid next door.
Yeah, because they'll say, oh, you're just an adolescent. You'll get over it. It's just a stage of life.
I would know what to say. I would sit there and go, no. But, you know,
I'd rather them come talk to me than go to an adult.
Yeah. You
because
can't.
They got over that and they say, oh, you know, it passes. But how do you know that it's going to pass if you're not over it yet?
Because it was said that the rate is higher among young people. Okay? I think that young people should learn about it and know how to recognize it and know what to do about it if we're going to ever, not prevent, but, well, yeah, I guess I could say prevent. Yeah. If you're ever going to prevent the problem, or...
Yeah, stop
I think
it.
It's important to... Yeah. It's important to take the problem to the young people where it's happening. People who talk to each other and let...
Yeah, a lot of people in the villages just don't know how to communicate, basically. They don't know how to talk to each other.
And a reason...
In a
one of the reasons
logical.
Is because they talk themselves.
Yeah.
And it's... I know if I was having a real bad personal problem, I wouldn't know. I couldn't take it to an adult. I'd take it to my best friend, you know, and if... It would be real good if they knew how to, you know, knew what to say.
Yeah,
knew what to say and how to deal with it.
Like communication skills, yeah. People in the villages, because they haven't been out, like, a lot of people my age have rarely been, you know, to a city or anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go for the very first time, it's just like a real blow to them.
A lot of people say that if you talk about it, you might cause it to happen more. Do you feel that that's true or not true?
No.
Nope.
You don't think that's true?
I think that if a person has a problem and they just keep it inside, just more will just add up and
yeah.
add up and add up, mm-hmm. and pretty soon it's just going to all explode.
You got to be open about these things.
You can't.
Because not talking about it makes it seem like it's bad to talk about it or something.
Mm-hmm. So you think it should be like part of the health curriculum then in every school or something?
Definitely,
like that?
Yes,
like in junior high level or high school or where? Or
mm-hmm. Probably junior high, because that's when students, you know, usually start, they're unsure about themselves.
And I think if someone was just going to use suicide as a tool, that you know if someone was talking about, suicide, you know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
And it's not, that leads you to know that the more you talk about it, the more it's going to happen. Well, you know. And someone's
yeah.
gonna kill himself.
We went.
They talk about it.
We went to a small village conference this spring, and it was, I mean, I didn't know what to expect. And what they did was they put alcoholism and drug abuse and suicide as one program. And first we talked about the effects of alcoholism and drug abusers, and then we talked about how that relates to suicide and what to do and how to recognize a suicidal person and what to say to them if, you know, we knew it was going to happen to try to prevent it.
That sounds like, makes it sound like everybody who's drinking is possibly going to kill themselves, so they shouldn't have, I don't know, maybe they shouldn't have put it that way. But.
No, I went to that thing and
it
didn't teach me that.
It
I know that it varies.
Okay, because, I don't know, it just sounds like that.
It just kind of gave us an overview of what was happening and the problems among different villages. I think it was real good.
Yeah, I'd go to one again.
Has TV changed the makeup, television itself, changed what's happening? Senator Binkley brought up the subsistence issue. Do students your age stay home more and watch TV rather than go out and hunt or fish?
I have a question. You were saying that since you've been in Edgecombe, when you go home, you can see, sort of identify things you didn't really like about home that you'd like to see changed because of your exposure to, you know, different people
mm-hmm.
in different areas. And that indicates a certain degree of dissatisfaction with where you came from. But the question I have is, those students that do go through the schools in their own villages,
not given the opportunity to go to Sitka or to wherever they might be, mm-hmm. to be a part of a different group, are they more satisfied with being in the villages than those of you who have gone to school outside and went home and try to make a living or live there? Is there a different degree of satisfaction being in that village?
You mean, are they more satisfied than you are after you went?
Right.
Yeah. I try to get my friends to, you know, come here, and they go, no, I like it here, and I'm going, why? You know, I look at this and look at that, and they go, so
I know, but
it doesn't bother them. It doesn't seem to. Probably does, but they don't want to admit it.
Yeah, well, like where I'm from, where there's 60 people, half of the high school students are trying to come here. And, you know, which is what I have.
And part of what we try and do here, Senator, is we try and not take any more than 20% out of any one high school so that we don't cause serious problems with us.
Political problems.
That's right.
And we also try and stay away from any more than 5% from any one district, a total school district of their high school age students.
Yeah, I think there should be more places you can go to for better teaching.
Have older brothers and sisters that went to Edgecombe or went to a boarding school prior to the state having high schools in the villages? What I'm getting at is,
yeah.
You know, the change that the villages went through and parents. Because it used to be when kids
not
got out of junior high, they were gone for 4 years, virtually. They'd come back in the summertime, but, you know, they were away from home, and it was a change, I think, for adults to adjust to also, that all of a sudden there was a big population of high school age students in the village, and that they had to deal with that they hadn't had to deal with for years before because they were away at boarding school. And I'm wondering if any of you maybe saw a change, if you had older brothers and sisters that went away to Edgecombe, and then maybe other kids in your family that stayed at home, and any changes that you might have seen in how your parents dealt with the kids.
Well, where I'm from, it used to be that we were the boarding school. We used to have this massive school. I mean, all the people from the villages on the Yukon would come to our school. So we had this big population of high school students, boarding home students. And that's all changed. There's like, 16 high schoolers, Jeremy?
Yeah, at least about.
16 high schoolers now.
Didn't you see a difference?
Well, how about in a community that didn't have a boarding school in that community?
What exactly do you mean?
Wouldn't you see, like, I think you'd see a difference between...
Oh, well, am I going to be different than them?
No, did things change from the perspective of your parents? Did, you know, they didn't have to deal with high school age kids before. Because whenever kids got to that age, they went away to Edgecombe or Bethel or to any other regional boarding schools where they weren't in the home. And they weren't there, and parents didn't have to deal with the problems associated with teenagers going through that period, 14 to 18 years old. They were away at boarding school.
Yes,
and that changed when all of a sudden there were high school villages, and parents had to all of a sudden deal with kids between that age group and villages too. You know, there just weren't teenage kids or teenage problems maybe in villages for a long period of time because the kids were not in the village.
I think it was better to send them off to a boarding school, I really do, because, I don't know, you can sort of see a difference of the people who go out, we're more outgoing than anybody from the villages, and they, you know, they have problems. All of my friends,
I can tell you something pretty amazing, that there was a large amount of students that came here to Edgecombe, but in the 50s and 60s from where I'm from, and every single one of those students have made it. They have a good, steady job, you know, have nice families, nice homes.
The leaders in the community.
They're there. They've made it. And if you compare that to the generation that's there now, that have stayed in Tanana, in their village all their life, if you compare it, it's terrible.
Yeah, we're a new generation back at home, and I don't know if they realize that, you know, there's about 7 of us who are considered our generation, and when we're going through that change of natives right now, and it's really
it's really putting stress on the students, on us.
That's the exact argument we were using open ed from.
It's
a good argument. It's proven itself over and over again.
Mm-hmm. In your village,
say the same for Shelley Jack.
In your villages, is there a real problem with those people who remain in the village who are out of high school or who have dropped out of high school, who are like 18 to 22 years old? Do they cause particular problems in a village situation?
Well, yeah. Very much so. I mean, if you can broaden that range to like from like 18 to 25 and 30, definitely. Because there's, the way I see it, there's a certain group of people in that age range where everything generates, I mean, all the problems generate. And that's after the boarding school system is closed down, you know, and people just started staying there. There's no challenge whatsoever, academically or anything. Or if you make it, you're real lucky. If you stay in the village and you make it in life, you're real lucky.
And I think that those kids who got out of high school and didn't make it to college, or who dropped out of high school, have a lot of these problems here. Most all of them, but not adolescents. They have all of these
problems.
The dropout
rate at home is in the villages is probably a lot higher. I mean, isn't it? Because a lot of students from my home town dropped out.
I think, too, that you have to kind of keep an overall perspective, too. Senators, and that's that there may be a lot of villages who aren't represented here who are very satisfied with their school.
True.
So, you know, those students aren't represented here because they have a very good system at home. And I think that the backbone of rural education has to be the REAA system. It has taken 10 years to build. And I, for instance, as one, I watched the achievement test scores in different villages, and I've seen a great improvement in the village school. But I guess one problem that some of the students are pointing out that I found living in a village for 5 years is that there's two real things that I feel are key factors in success of students in rural Alaska. One is you have to give them the academic tools to get the job done if they're going to go on in life and on in school. But the second thing is you also have to give them the social skills to succeed. And Mount Edgecombe can provide those kinds of social skills that you can't get in a village. And I know that in our particular village, we got our achievement test scores up on an average for our high school kids at the 72nd percentile. And yet a lot of our students were going on to college and still coming up back home again in 3 weeks. And the reason was they did not have the social skills necessary to survive. And so I think that Mount Edgecombe provides those social skills. I also feel that when we were talking about starting the school up, and we were talking about what grade level should be at Mount Edgecombe, you know, maybe some serious thought should be given to moving some of those students out of the REAAs in the real small high school at maybe the junior level, or if nothing else, at the senior level, to give those students, I don't want to say the word halfway school, but to give them a little added chance to have the same chance that these students have had. For instance, we have kids in college now who went to Mount Edgecombe last year who say that the college is not much different than Mount Edgecombe. It's very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're succeeding, whereas some of the village kids really have a problem succeeding. And we also notice that a lot of our kids, when they first come here, a lot of their heads are down when they get off the plane, and they are very shy, and their social skills are not honed at all. And it takes a while to open those kids up. And some of these students, the reason that they're opening up is some of them have been here for a while, but now we have trouble keeping them quiet. But there is, I guess what I'm trying to say is I think that you need an overall perspective too. And there's also, you could bring a group of students from interior Alaska in here from different places who would probably be giving different arguments than mm-hmm. our kids that they feel that their education is fine and they have very good computer programs or whatever. And so there is differences of opinion.
I noticed
I noticed my opinions changed of my village because I left the village in the sixth grade, and when I went back, I wanted to get out of there. You know, I still did last year about this time. And then, I don't know, I called 2 months mm-hmm. after I got out of school. I called Mount Edgecombe and asked them if I got accepted here. They said yes.
Okay. Well, I visited you about last year about this time.
Yeah, I wanted out there.
Okay, thank you. Interior. All right, Northwest. South Central, get you up here too. South Central and Northwest. So that would be Anchorage, Palmer, Wasilla, or, Wasilla, Willow. We don't have a lot of Anchorage students, but the sheets I gave you on Anchorage kids, I'm not sure exactly how many we have, but there are not
six
kids at all. So we're not sure if it's because of the alternative high schools that they have in Anchorage, or that if the word just is not getting out or whatever. In the old Mount Edgecombe, counselors and administrators used to go out to the villages and to Anchorage and recruit, and we don't do that. We don't do it at all. So that may be part of the reason, too. Okay.
From the Northwest District, that's him and I, I find personally that the lack of planned activities and the coping skills of people and cultural shock are some of the main reasons that people commit suicide. And under the lack of activities, alcohol, drug and alcohol abuse are underneath that. That's a big reason. Nobody else has anything to do, so let's go out and have a party. Yeah. And part of that is there's just no place to plan things. In my home village, 850 people, it's a big village, but still there's no place to go. There's the Rondi, which is, they have an occasional dance there and a few video games, and then there's the open gym. Not everybody enjoys any of those things, or not everybody's allowed to go to the Rondi because of the drugs and alcohol that are there. I think more of anything is the coping skills. Goes under the cultural shock. There's just so much in the last 20 or 30 years. Since I've moved to my village, they got television the year before I moved there. We had jet service 3 days. Now it's to just have service to Anchorage every day, flights, passenger service, cable television. We have video rentals. Two big stores, and I think going back to the Natural Helpers and the Alaska Teen Institute, I think those are two necessary things that need to be statewide. People need to learn how to cope with their skills. I think a lot of the reasons people commit suicide is they're just lost, they're confused, they don't know what to do, they don't have the coping skills.
Who should give those to the students? Should that be the parents' responsibility? Is it the schools, the churches? Whose responsibility is it?
I think maybe what the Alaska Teen Institute and Natural Helpers are doing is just a separate group. I don't think it can be any just teachers or parents. I don't think that's their responsibility. I think they have a part in it, but it's not just their responsibility. It has to come from some group other than somebody has reaction with every day. Counselors like Hiram Catrick and the two guys that came here from the Alaska Teen Institute, and they have training sessions, and they teach you certain things, how to refer people if they're having their problems and you don't know how to handle their problems, referral skills, how to say no, and how to stop enabling people. Those kind of things are very important.
One other problem, too, that hasn't been brought up that the students wouldn't be aware of is that when the students were talking about hiring Native people, the state hiring system, the register, does not really provide a lot of flexibility to hire within Alaska, for Alaska Natives. We we could give you specific examples where we could have hired dormitory people, as a, for instance, that we wanted to hire who were native, who because of the system we couldn't hire. So there is a serious problem with the whole register and that whole system. I feel it's discriminatory. And some of the specific examples, you know, I could go into 10 or 11 different examples of things that have happened to us since we've tried to hire native people at Mount Edgecombe. And I, if other state agencies have as much problem hiring as we do, I can understand why there's some serious problems. And at the recent ANBANS convention, Governor Cooper spoke to that native group, and that was brought out. And I, every native convention I've been to, the same problem is brought out, and yet we continue to live with that system. It's horrible.
It's so frustrating, particularly in the small community, too, in rural Alaska, when you have a state job that comes open, and it's one of the few jobs in the village, and then here somebody transfers in from the outside and gets that job. It really gets frustrating. And I know we've tried to do some work on that. Senator Zaroff, and I was in the House at that time, myself and Senator Herman introduced some legislation to try and deal with that in the state register, and we weren't successful, but we did get some changes that the Division of Personnel implemented that at least did more recruiting and advertising for those positions in rural Alaska. But we've still got a long ways to go in that regard, no doubt about it.
The system is so confusing.
It is.
You go down and people don't even know what job to sign up for. And yet, if you aren't signed up for the job, then you're not on that register.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and they have things like you sign up for the secretarial positions, and they don't even give you a typing tip. And so you end up with people who have 104 points on the register who can't type 15 words a minute. And it's just the whole system is really archaic and really needs some drastic work. And that we've had cases where Native people have gone down, for instance, to sign up as dormitory attendants, and thought they were checking the right box, and the box was permanent full-time position. We don't have permanent full-time jobs, and those jobs we have permanent part-time. Well, if they didn't check the permanent part-time, they didn't even end up on the register. And then they don't open up the register for a year and a half because there's 100 people on the register and only two people were hired in that job classification the previous year. So you've got good qualified people, but they won't open the register in order to get those people on the list. So those are just some of the problems that you have. But anyway, that would help some. And when the students were talking about hiring Native counselors and Native people, I think you're going to have to take care of that other problem first, or you're never going to be able to have the opportunity to put Native people in those buildings to help with the problem. Do you feel then that one of the major items that need to be taken care of in rural Alaska or rural villages then is to provide kids with activities, high school students with more activities? Is that what you were?
I think so, yes.
And would that help, do you think, with what percentage of students in the village you came from have what you'd call a serious substance abuse problem?
Probably close to 80-90%.
How many from here?
20.
20?
No.
Not bad?
I don't even live in a village. I have about my friends. I mean, with the majority of the people I do see, I'd say all of them have a problem drinking and stuff, because that's the only thing to do there. I mean, there's nothing else there. There's nothing for a challenge at all. I mean, it's boring there, actually. I mean, there's no activities or nothing to do.
We've had cases where we were told initially when we started management that some of the old superintendents told me that they had to force kids on the planes to get them to come to management because their parents were forcing them to come to school here.
Mm-hmm.
We've had almost a reverse situation sometimes in sending kids home. They don't want to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't really have a lot to go back to. And I don't know how you handle that situation. That's really a... We've had to condense our calendar at Mount Edgecombe in order to live within the budgets that we have. Our school now only lasts physically 8 months, so the students are here on a very condensed calendar.
When does the school year start?
September 1st, and then it ends April 22nd.
April 22nd.
So our kids are here in very intensive education for 8 months, and then back home. I'm just wondering if some of our kids couldn't go back and help to provide some peer counseling back to their high school.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that, I see, you know, I think our students would be good group leaders for sessions just like we're doing right now.
Have you looked at some kind of curriculum involved?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a positive that's coming out of this. I can see that maybe we could possibly help out.
I think peer counseling is a good idea, but you just can't stick a student without the professional training with it. You have to have another counselor, somebody that's trained to do that. And somebody with that kind of training will be hard to find. That's the only problem I can foresee with that. Not necessarily just peer counseling, maybe sponsor teen support groups also, just where, you know, you have a bunch of students come together and you have certain guidelines you set up in this group, and they can discuss several different problems all at one time, and therefore you're not limiting it to one thing. I think that's also another suggestion besides just one-on-one peer counseling.
One of the problems that came out in some discussions that we had yesterday was that haven't been mentioned yet. In fact, one of the groups that was up here earlier had mentioned it yesterday, and that's the darkness, and that brings on depression more than a normal light situation. And there's been studies done, and that could be a contributing factor to the suicidal tendencies also.
Do you live in a dry lake?
Yeah.
That's why it's 20% or less.
Yeah, it's a small population.
Right. You must live in that.
You can import it, but you can't sell it.
Right. That's what I probably wasn't understanding. And you don't live in a village?
No, I live at Caswell Lakes. It's about, I don't know, it's 1.80 miles of the Parks Highway, it's close to Talkeetna.
Do you have
a
road system there?
Yeah, there's a bar right next to the area, which doesn't help much.
Found that through the steps we had last time, you know, a phenomenal amount of these cars are caused by alcohol. We've seen that tie it in more closely. And, but versus the underlying problem of what causes the use of drug abuse, drugs and alcohol, we don't know.
Yeah.
But that they're talking about here, and how do you handle those things?
Also, I think another, I think even if, where I'm from, even if you just said it was a dry village, I don't think you'd cure the problem, because there's too many people that before were bootlegging, and they could just start up just as easily as they did before. And right now, they were trying to open up a liquor store outside of the city limits. They were trying to get a business license for that, but there was some resistance, so they didn't open it up. Some other problems with it. I don't, you can't just cure somebody of alcohol. It's impossible. There's always going to be that problem no matter where.
Well, we're not here to deal with that thing. It's one of the, there's such a close association between that and suicide that, of course, that's not the basic problem. It's something besides that, I'm sure. Depression or what the things we've been talking about.
But it is a big problem with it, Paul. I think that's maybe 60% of the reason people are mixed up with suicide is because of abuse of alcohol and drugs.
Do the elders in your village have a lot of control of what happens in your village? Your elders are very strong, aren't they? And so you don't have probably the rates of alcoholism or the rates of drug abuse that other villages that you know about or that you go to and see. You don't have those problems in your village. So it would be your elders of that village who would have a very strong influence then on what's taking place. How about church? Do you have a strong church group in your village? So those two factors then probably really help.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the legislature, we recognize that it's not laws, whether it's a local law or a state law or a federal law, that are going to stop people from abusing alcohol or abusing drugs, but at least it's a tool for those communities that want to do something about it for them to use. For this young man's community, for instance, it apparently helps in that community because the majority of the people get a chance to vote on that and make a statement about alcohol and say that, this is a standard that we're going to set in our village. And they have the tool to do that through the local option laws that the states enacted to be able to say, we're not going to allow alcohol in this village.
But the village has to take a stand on that.
That's the key to it. That's the key to it. And if the village isn't willing to do it, then it's not going to work. You know, the law's not going to work unless there's strong leadership in the village and the consensus of the village that this is the way that we want our village run.
Because you can go into some villages and you have a totally different feeling than you have going into other villages. Mm-hmm. And if you start looking at, well, why, what's the difference between these villages? The one factor I found the most, and I certainly don't have the experience you have, Senator, but the one factor that I've noticed probably more than any other is what influence do the village elders have over what's happening in the village. And if you have a strong village leadership, elder leadership, then usually you have a very good community. And see, we don't have hardly any students from his particular school district, of which there's 12 different schools where he comes from. And he's the only student here from that district. So there's a reason. That's what I'm saying. There are good schools out there.
Yeah.
But aren't those same ones that are good schools also those that have that strong elder leadership and where they said no to substance abuse real heavily and they enforce it? Whether you're dry or not, it doesn't make any difference. Like you were saying, it doesn't make any difference.
You had sort of the same, when the ladies mentioned it last week, was record that when she went back to her village, that she looked at it differently from the way to school, and she indicated that she could see, she felt uncomfortable in some areas because that she could see some things in life that had changed or that she wasn't aware of the problem before. You have that same feeling in your village? Or you feel like you're home when you go back?
Yeah.
Like coming home, huh?
He just got here.
Yeah, home.
That's a new student.
That's that next year.
Okay, well, thank you, Susan. Okay, a group from the Wasilla Palmer Matsu District. And they had an arrangement there where they would board the students out. And they've pretty much given up on that program and are sending their students to us now. So St. George does not have any 9 through 12, and St. Paul does not have any 11-12. So it's the village elders have decided, and their school boards have decided that they feel that it's better that the students get off of the islands for at least their last 2 years of high school, and so that's why we have so many students.
Are they off? The last 2 years, all the students are here or off the islands?
Most of them are either here or Anchorage. We don't take all of the Preble Off kids. There's probably another 15 or 20 kids that are going to Anchorage. And a few left in Palmer and Wasilla.
Well, I hope to travel out and visit your islands here in December. Senator Zaroff has invited me to go out there with him. So. To be able to visit the first time. It's tough there all winter.
Yeah, I read it.
Don't scare the kids. Some of them going all the trip.
Oh.
Well, we got together yesterday, like everybody else did, and we came up with family, peer pressure, there were the cliques or groups, you know, being left out of a group, and there was not having any money, and then there was the boy-girl relationships, and the parents, their drinking and fighting problem, how that affects them, and how people treat them. Oh yeah, there is also no recreation. There's plain recreation.
Do you think that your village people have made the right decision in not having the last 2 years of high school there and sending all the kids out? Is that the right thing to do for the Preble Off?
Yeah, I think so.
Do all of you feel that way? Do all of you feel that? Would any of you stay at St. Paul or St. George, if you had high school there, would any of you have stayed there and gone to school? Or would you have all wanted to go somewhere else?
Somewhere else.
Okay. Pretty much 100%, if you think that ought to happen. Has the economy of the Preble Off changed considerably because of the seal issue? Has that caused more problems than were there previously because of the cash that was lost because of the seal harvest?
Yeah, when they cut us off, it did. When they cut us off, it did.
So that was a major factor then, you think, in problems that have occurred?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I can't say.
That's a hard one to tell.
How are things up in Cripple?
You're totally isolated.
Cold.
Away from everything.
It costs about $800 to go round trip to Anchorage and back.
So how about problems with young adults? I mean, there's probably not a lot of teenagers, at least from 14 years on up, in Triple Ops this time of year. Nobody's around.
No, just the younger ones and the ones that stayed back, that didn't, they're not going to college or anything. They're just there.
So are there not a lot of problems in the wintertime with young adults?
It gets very boring. It gets very boring for
them.
The fall is very dead.
Yeah, whenever, like, people who don't go to college, they stay home and there's parties and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. That's all they do.
And yeah, during the holidays, people get depressed and start abusing alcohol sometimes.
No, what they do is they start, they shut down the tavern and they don't sell alcohol.
During the holidays?
Well, during Lent, you know, before Easter, like 9 weeks before Easter. They do that, and then they start bootlegging, and you know, they do get hurt.
9 weeks before Easter, they shut down all the taverns?
Yeah, they shut down the tavern and the
recreation.
Yeah. And the recreation, they shut the recreation down too. And so we just start walking in the streets.
So that's your limit.
Yeah.
Give up recreation.
Yeah.
I wonder, Susan, do we have statistics from the Cripple Ops? It'd be interesting to take a look at that and see some of the differences maybe from the Cripple Ops compared to other areas, if there's not a large student population out there during the, you know, for 8 or 9 months of the year.
What kind of statistics?
Well, for instance, in suicide statistics or alcohol abuse statistics for young adults.
Suicide statistics tend to get lumped with the Aleutian, because it's the Aleutian Cripple Ops Island Association that. So I'd have to go back and take them apart. None come to mind in a two-year period on the Cripple Ops, the stats that I've seen. But then overall, there are not very many suicides by high school age students in the state.
It's 18 to 24 is where the big range is after high school.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you students would like to either elaborate on or anything new that hasn't been covered by some of the other groups?
No, I think it's just about all covered.
Okay. Do you have any specific questions?
Well, I'm just a little curious, this might be a little off subject, but when you finish my income and some of you probably continue on, some of you probably something else, planning on going back and living for a while?
Depends. I don't know. You want to go out and get it? I don't know. It's hard to say.
No jobs.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like promising to returning home and being able to pursue a career. You have to move out of another area to do that, right?
Mm-mm. And all the jobs are mostly the summertime, too. There's hardly any money.
You know, one thing that the state's doing out there is, of course, the harbors, both St. George and St. Paul, to try and increase those or make them large enough that big processing vessels and big fishing vessels can come into those harbors, and hopefully we can develop a bottom fishing industry out there to a point where it does attract some onshore processing and some opportunities there for employment. So it's a huge industry that's out there, and we're trying to develop those two islands so that they'll be able to benefit from that industry. So maybe there are going to be some more jobs on
the football. Yeah, no, but what they started, what, 5 years ago? They started that a long time ago, didn't they?
Yeah, I think one of them, I know
Martha Wagner.
Yeah, I think one of them we were able to get, Senator Zaroff was able to get appropriations to get one of them finished, and I can't recall which one. One of them, the largest.
It's yours? Your guys being fixed right now,
yep.
Isn't it?
The
ours is off.
We have one dock in so far.
Yeah, and the other one I think is about halfway there, or at least half the money has been appropriated.
Yeah, and you guys got your money, right?
Yep.
St. George got their money.
Yeah, but it's a small fishery going on and out of the fishery.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, he worked in the customs department.
Yeah,
Pasco.
Come on out, you can see if you can come here.
But it's mostly just, just the local fish.
Local fish, and
the processing and flying an anchor case, which is a market, which is, the price for it, but the problem is that there's a certain quota of poundage, and so-called outside boats, they are outside boats, come in and fill the quota before the people in the area have a chance to get small boats, and so they have a chance to really get into the fishery as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Senator, what would the unemployment rate be for, say, the interior and like Southwest Alaska?
Well, that's a real bone of contention between legislators like myself and the Department of Labor. As a matter of fact, we just had Finance Committee hearings the last 2 days in Juneau, and the Commissioner of the Department of Labor was up, and Senator Zaroff and I were sparring with the Commissioner over what the unemployment statistics are for rural Alaska. The official statistics are very low. Many places they rate the unemployment rate at 15 or 16 or 18% for many areas of rural Alaska, when we know that they're 50, 60, 70% are the real unemployment rates in rural Alaska. And it's a continual debate between us and the Department of Labor over how they calculate their statistics. And so we don't feel that the official statistics that they have are accurate by any means. And that, of course, gears a lot of federal programs sometimes and federal dollars. And we've continually been trying to work with the department to get more accurate statistics.
Well, from what I hear the students saying is that 18 to 25-year-old group, most of them are unemployed.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem area you have with suicide.
And in that district, the Aleutian-Pribilof area, they break it down by census districts, federal census districts. And that's actually one of the lowest unemployment rates in the state, according to their statistics, which, in my opinion, are meaningless.
Okay, thank you, students.
Hey. I am.
Okay.
There's some people in our group who weren't in our group yesterday, so I'm not sure if they're all going to agree with what we say. But yesterday, we were trying to ask ourselves why there was a suicide problem and think of some solutions. And we had a real problem because just we're all from about the same area, but the problems are really different. They're in no way the same. Like we have one person who's from a village who hasn't had any suicides from the 60s or 70s. Then there's like from around where I am, there was one year where there was 5 suicides in less than a year.
In the same village?
Yeah, in the same village. It was the neighboring village, but some of our reasons were right now the natives are really caught in between their culture and the Western cultures, and there's some child abuse, and that kind of goes with a lot of parents are alcoholics, and there's always boy-girl relationships, and a lot of kids don't get enough attention from their parents or their friends. I mean, everyone knows everyone, and they all expect everyone else to take care of them, and they don't. They just don't get enough attention a lot of time, and a lot of people have a low sense of self-esteem. They don't think that they're good enough. There's a real bad substance abuse problem out where we are, especially in the villages around where I am from. A lot of people choose to drink just to escape from problems of school and family, and it's really hard to say why they're drinking and stuff because every case is different, and that's what we came up with yesterday. We were kind of arguing because it's hard to present this as a group when all the problems are so different. One thing we said is that a lot of people say they drink and they abuse drugs because of all these problems, and they just can't have fun when they're not straight, or when they are straight. Mm-hmm. Say that backward. And another thing is copycats. In a few villages, people are just doing what everyone else is doing, which is either just hurting themselves or actually having the guts to kill themselves. And the thing is, it's not all of us, it's just a few of us where that's true, where if somebody's friend kills himself or their boyfriend kills himself, so they kill themselves because they just don't know how to cope with it. And if it's not killing themselves, then it's hurting themselves. Either they're cutting their wrists or they're playing with guns, or they go out hunting and they don't wear hats and gloves and stuff, and just to hurt themselves. Some of the solutions we came up with was some programs to help the children deal with their parents' alcoholism, because there's a lot of that out where we are. Someone from one of the villages said that, it was mentioned before, that all the darkness can really depress someone, especially if they're already depressed, and the darkness really depresses. But then, and other villages were saying that everyone's just waiting for nighttime because that's when everything happens. So we have conflicts there too. It was also mentioned that the town, it's usually, you know, we have to break it down into different towns because everyone's so different, but the town really can't help themselves unless they want to be helped. It seems like a lot of times they don't really see that they have a problem, and it takes someone else to see it. We think that the villages need more counselors, especially Native counselors, because a lot of people have a hard time talking to someone who doesn't understand how they live and why they're having their problems. We considered that it would be easier to have, instead of taking people out of the villages to be trained and sending them back, it would be easier to have someone from outside train the people in the village so that they can stay there and really help out their own village, so they wouldn't have to leave for a long time and have to come back.
Like a counselor?
A counselor would come into the village and teach some of the villagers to become counselors, and then so that the villagers could come to them and not the outsider.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a definite outsider and insider, I mean. It's,
but rather than somebody from the village going out to training someplace.
Yeah.
Bring someone into training.
Yeah. And because there is a lot of substance abuse, that usually comes about after someone gets depressed, or it comes about just because everyone else is doing it. We think that there needs to be more programs to help kids with substance abuse, and to start when they're really young. We've got third and fourth graders running around at home getting stoned and sniffing gas and all that kind of stuff. It's real bad. I don't know about some of the other villages.
Maybe they think that because their parents do it and because their older brothers and sisters do it, that it must be okay.
Yeah.
And someone needs to tell them that it's not.
That's just like a copy. They think they're just copying them.
In the third and fourth grade?
Mm-hmm. We had our counselor, we have two crisis counselors in our village, and one of them was, in the district, and one of them was talking about a first grader from another village who is always high on something. I mean, that's how bad it is sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Even